Broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain, British Columbia, this is CJSF 90.1 FM.
Show, Diana Brandt will be telling us about AEBC.
So what can you tell me about the Alliance?
The Alliance of... that wasn't a very good way to start, but the Alliance for Equality of Blind Canadians has been around for almost 35 years. It started in 1992. Sorry, now you have to edit things. But anyway... It started by Paul and Mary Ellen Gabius, and it was started largely in BC and Ontario, and at that time it was called the National Federation of the Blind Advocates for Equality, which is almost as hard to say as the Alliance of Equality for Blind Canadians, but anyway... But by 2004, it had become what it is today. I was not involved at that time. I started only in 2020 with AEBC, and I've been there so for almost 6 years. I'm the national secretary for the organization. And I find it's a very collegial group. I think we've got, close to 200 members, and more come in every day. Our membership is primarily people who are blind, have partial sight, or are deafblind. And we have also, besides board members, we've got 7 board members plus a executive director and a communication coordinator. So that's pretty much our staff. And then we have a lot of committees that do work for us. Our primary focus is advocacy. And we have 4 main areas that we work in. One is healthcare and accessibility for healthcare. And that's an interesting one because it isn't just the healthcare that people receive, but it's things as simple as, can you access the medical form you fill out in your doctor's office before you have an appointment if you're new to a system? And a lot of times you can't. So you have to have somebody with you that will be filling out sometimes some private, very private information for you. And that's not always a comfortable situation to be in. So that's one piece of healthcare. But there's also, we're working with an eye strategy group. And we're also... working in other areas. One of them is income supports for blind and visually impaired people, because the latest figures that I saw are pretty much 60% of blind and visually impaired people are either underemployed or unemployed. And when you talk about the group that isn't even, that doesn't have jobs, that gets higher. But if you keep the underemployed in there, it the figures look better, but really it's not a great figure.
I'd imagine not. So in terms of advocacy, which you mentioned is one of the key areas, do you ever encounter any myths or misperceptions regarding blindness and vision impairment?
All the time. We did a whole segment last year, and it's funny that, and maybe you've seen them up on our YouTube channel. We have put up, we did a thing that said, ask me anything, and we got our members to send in questions about what were some of the most common myths that we had. And there were things like, well, blind people obviously can't travel on their own. They would need to always have someone with them. Or they have a guide dog, and their guide dog can do everything for them, which is also not true. The guide dogs are very helpful, but you have to know where you're going if you have a guide dog. You can't just assume that the dog knows. Eventually, if you do the same route every day, they can tend to do that. Let me see some of the other myths that I should know them because I just put them all up. We have a newsletter called AEBC Connect, and it comes out once a week right now. And we pull in information from our partners, other organizations, newsletters. We have our own events. We did two author events this week with blind or visually impaired authors, and they talked about books they've written. One is about a lady who is deafblind and has a guide, or had a guide dog. The dog has since passed away. Another one is about the best kept secrets of traveling. So it's tips and tricks for blind travelers and it's everything as simple as, if you're uncomfortable or not used to traveling, if you want to get a taste of it, get a hotel room in your city and just see the things that you encounter. And if it doesn't work out, then you're close to home. But she also gives lots of examples of how to organize your hotel room, dining tips when you're in a restaurant. One of the most annoying things that happen, and I know why it happens, when you go out, whether you're shopping or whether you're going to a restaurant, individuals that you're with, people will look at you and you don't react because I don't happen to see at all. I have been blind since birth. But what that means is I also don't see when other people are looking at me and I can't give eye contact back. So they can look at me, and it's kind of like interacting with a stone wall because I won't even necessarily know they're looking at me. And so you try and teach people to speak to you, to say, well, often what they do is they speak to the person you're with. And I don't mind it the first time because that's how they can get my attention. But if they continue to do it after I've responded and turned and smiled at them and faced them, I really expect them to talk to me, and sometimes they do, and sometimes they keep talking to the individual that I'm with, and that can be a little annoying. Some of the other myths that we have are, blind people can't... Actually, the best one I had was a child in a classroom. And they said, well, when you get up in the morning, can you dress yourself? And I said, well, yeah, I put on my clothes the same way you do. And the thing I like about kids is that they're not afraid to ask questions. And that's one of the best ways to advocate and educate. Get the kids young and talk to them very directly because when they talk to me, and I happen to have artificial shells, so my eyes are generally fairly open. But if I don't have them in, they're closed. And my grandson said to me, Nana, you have, so now your eyes are open. Can you see now? And I said, no, I still can't see. It doesn't help. But kids are wonderful because they give you the best, they're not afraid to ask questions. And I wish more people were like that, because I've been blind all my life and it's my reality and I'm used to it. I do the things I do. I was a teacher. I was a technology specialist. I was fortunate that most of my life I was employed. I went to university. And that's the other thing. The assumption is that we aren't going to be able to do those things. When I went to university, there was no electronic texts. I got all my material read to me by volunteer readers. The good thing that came out of that was that that's how I met my husband, because he was a reader. So, I mean, there's advantages to not having technology around to do stuff for you.
Why, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Oh, for sure. I don't know if that's the kind of stuff you...
Now, my friends, a couple more of those on-location interviews from the recent ICHA fishing derby.
This is Cam Wells here with Joe Van Niekerk. He's going to be telling us a little bit about what brought him out to the ICHA fishing derby this year. So, where's your this event?
Well, we've been doing this show for probably, I think, about 12 years. I think we've been doing it for. So it's Music Express. And, we enjoy coming here. So take me through some of the highlights of what brings Music Express back to this event. We want to help out with these guys. I mean, this is a good cause. This is a really good cause. And that's what we're all volunteers. And we've been practicing our music for this for several months. And so we're always coming up with some new music. And there's going to be the dance-off here later on. And you know, the kids always like that. So
do you find that events like this create needed presence for folks with disabilities in the community?
Yeah, I think it's definitely it's an awareness thing, right?
For sure.
I think a lot of people don't even know that this thing really exists. That it's just word of mouth and people like yourself that bring it kind of to light.
So you can send any message to the community about the need for events like this.
Kind of lost on that one. It's the need for events like this. I mean, absolutely. You know, it's just like you've spoken to my brother too, and his trying to make the awareness better for what he does too with every Canadian cats. And this is all part of it. You know, these are Canadians and they count. So,
great tapestry to disability is
important. Absolutely, yeah. And for those of us lucky enough not to have to live with it, you know, it can at least be part of it and recognize that there's a need for help. And this is all part of it. And that's the fishing derby here. It's just outstanding. I mean, you talk about the fishing derby, most everybody knows about it.
This is Cam Wells here with Chuck McGee, and he's going to be telling me a little bit about his hopes for the ICHA Fishing Derby today. So what do you hope for the event today?
Well, we're hoping for a good turnout as always. We're thankful for the weather being great, and we just look forward to putting this on.
So, have you helped out with the event in previous years?
Yes, this is my third year. I came on with Joe Lesperance, and I find it very rewarding.
So, take me through a couple of the highlights. What stands out for you about this?
This ideal outcome for today. Hopefully everybody has a great time and we catch some big fish. In events like this, do you find that they create a needed presence for the disability community in the larger community?
Oh, most certainly. It brings awareness and it's an overall helpful.
So do you see yourself being a part of this in years to come?
Many, many years. I'll keep coming out as long as they'll have me.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Kim.
This is Cam Wells here with
Patricia Wallace.
She's going to be telling me a little bit about what brought her out to the ICHA Fishing Derby today. So what brings you out to this event?
My daughter has cerebral palsy, and we've been fishing for quite some time. Last time we were here was back in 2019, and my daughter also plays Miracle League baseball, so we took the time out today for baseball to come fishing. Fish and fish.
So why do you think it's important that individuals with disabilities have an event like this? The community aspect, or just being at one major
thing? It's a wide variety of different things, as to different people, different aspects of different disabilities, and different, just all around different things.
So, do you find that an event like this helps create visibility to people with disabilities should be included just as part of the community?
Oh, yes, definitely. This is one of those things that the community comes together, fishing people. You can be a beginner to a pro, and this is for everybody.
So, what would the ideal outcome for today's event be if you could see anything happen?
Watch all the fish. Watching everybody catch a fish.
So, you mentioned your daughter plays Miracle League as well. Tell me a little bit.
The Miracle League is in Amherstburg, the Miracle League baseball. And, so she plays for Team Bombers, and there's 9 other teams that play at the Miracle League in Amherstburg, and there's also one that's at Riverside.
Handy Link will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
So, you're hanging with your inner circle. Maybe you're making a cocktail and having fun. Even when with friends, it's important to remember alcohol and cannabis each mess with your driving skills. Be cool. Make sure you and your friends get home safe. Take a cab if you need to. A few bucks can save a life. Then, you can do it again next weekend. A message from Arrive Alive, Drive Safe.
Welcome back to Handy Link. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard a little bit about AEBC from Diana Brent, and we heard a little bit more about the recent ICHA Fishing Derby. In this segment of our show, Jason Linton will be telling us a little bit about the Salvation Army. So, can you tell me a little bit about how the Salvation Army provides supports for those impacted by a disability?
Oh, absolutely. So, it's interesting because, you know, when we define disability now, there's so many things that you need to consider, because so many disabilities are invisible, and we may be providing services to someone who may not have disclosed in terms of their disability, and we don't even know that we're doing that, right? And they're just actually participating in our regular services that we provide. But that said, we do have 24 beds here at our Salvation Army Windsor Center of Hope Center on Church Street that is considered supportive housing. So what we do, they have to be relatively independent, but most of those residents, they will live with us for as long as they wish. There's no intention of them moving to a different housing, and we provide supports to them. Some of them may have there's a variety of disabilities that they come with. Some may have some mental illness. Others may have more physical disabilities, and, you know, we provide the supports in-house to help them move forward in a productive way. That may include meals. It may include cleaning their rooms and laundry. But if there's things that we cannot provide in-house, we look to bring services in. That may be external services, but we bring them in to help our clients. So we have good partnerships with CMHA. We have a really good partnership with other shelters in the community that may have on-site mental health services, where we can take advantage of that. There's also a really good program in Windsor called Shelter Health. And that program is where medical professionals actually come to the shelters, and every shelter in Windsor has this available to their clients, to their residents, and our people on who may be living in supportive housing, they have opportunity to a degree to take care, to take advantage of that service as well.
So it's interesting you mentioned about food services. Lack of proper nutrition, lack of access would seem to sort of exacerbate some of the existing disabilities, and sounds like you're providing some relief on that end.
Yeah, so for all of our shelter residents, whether they're in supportive housing or whether they're in our emergency shelters, they're all fed 3 square meals a day. And yeah, you're quite right about that. It is, nutrition is an incredibly important piece of what we're providing. And with, we have expectations that people will be involved in programming that we have here. And if they're not getting off to the right start during a day in terms of having a nutritious meal, and throughout the day, it can be very challenging for people to have the energy to participate. Many are going through, you know, the hardest time in their lives. They may have lost their home at no fault of their own. We all know that the price of everything has gone up significantly out there, and it's really becoming hard for people to make ends meet. And some, you know, unfortunately, aren't able to pay rent, and they end up being evicted. And, you know, the vision of the traditional person who actually accesses a homeless shelter is changing. The demographic is changing, and they're people that you would not normally expect to access homeless shelters, but they're being put in such difficult positions that they have no choice. Right. So, but back to your point around nutrition, it's extremely important. We also provide a food bank 3 days a week to the general public. So, and that is a very well used, unfortunately, a very well used food bank. But again, it speaks to how challenging it is out there for people to be able to put to make ends meet. It's very difficult.
So. It would seem to be an advantage in your program for anyone who suddenly acquires a disability, in as much as the potential job capacity might be affected, because, well, statistically, folks with disabilities don't tend to have as easy a time finding employment, and the poverty risk would seem to be substantial.
Yeah, I would assume that's true. You know, we do our best here to accommodate wherever possible, and in fact we're mandated to do, we're bound by the Accessibility for Ontarians with Disabilities Act. We're bound by that, and we certainly do, though I think that's a minimum standard, quite frankly, and it's not just about push buttons and accessible hallways. It's also, I think, about being able to respond to issues in which a person is taking your trust and disclosing to you what their disability may be, and being able to respond to that in an effective manner to ensure that they're having the most productive, they feel the most comfortable here, and there's no impediment to them to be able to do what they would normally do, right? We take that very seriously, and it's an incredibly important part, not just with our people who are residing with us. It's also with our staff. And it translates into, I think, a general type of approach that we at the Salvation Army are looking to take in terms of, you know, being as accommodating as possible.
So how do you reach out to folks who could potentially benefit from your work?
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. You know, when they think of the Salvation Army, they often think of the churches that we may have in the various communities that we serve, and also the homeless pieces of what we do. And in terms of our outreach, there's so much more to the Salvation Army and what we do, and getting that message out there is incredibly important. So we've been coming along with the times, and our presence on social media now is so much better than it was just as recent as 2 years ago. If you look at the progress we've made in social media, everyone typically has a phone, and we're trying to get to people from that perspective. We also are dependent on other agencies within the community who may be seeing people who could benefit from our programming and the services that we offer to refer into to our services. And we do a number of community events throughout the year. It's not just fundraising during our kettle campaign. Like that's certainly an important piece of what we do. Everyone probably knows those kettles that are out there during the Christmas season and the bell ringers, etc. That's an important piece. But we also have a number of community events that we do outside of the kettle campaign. And one of which is coming up very shortly. We call it Sally Fest, and it's a community barbecue. It's open to everyone, anyone who wants to come. And we're hosting that on July 8th from 5:30 p.m. to 7 p.m. in our parking lot at 355 Church Street. That's an annual event. We do it every year. But another example of how we're trying to reach our community partners, how we're trying to meet people in the community who could benefit from the services that we provide.
I'd thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
No problem, yeah.
Friends, I was very pleased that Jason came on to speak about the issues of poverty and disability. For the fact of the matter is, these economic times, a lot of folks with disabilities are facing uncertainty, asking the question, is there help? Is there support? The fact of the matter is, you have to go looking for that support. It's not going to come to you. But for folks with disabilities, they're no less entitled to the basic needs of survival than anyone else in society. Sometimes we look at it from the standpoint of, oh, I don't have a disability, it's not my problem. That's awfully short-sighted, for any one of us, at any time, can acquire a disability. And just because they're living in a poverty situation does not make them any less of a person or any less entitled to dignity and respect. Organizations like the Salvation Army are proving folks with disabilities can, in fact, at least take steps towards independence and survival. It is a great tragedy that the issues surrounding poverty and disability are not simple ones. From a government standpoint, the answer may be, just throw a token amount of money at the problem, it'll go away. No. The fact is, folks with disabilities can have complex medical needs, require more than just the basic income support. We have to tackle these issues from a holistic standpoint, I think, recognizing an entire person, recognizing that the need isn't just income, it is contribution, it is having a job, the ability to get to that job, having stable and sustainable housing, not just a place. We all hope for something better in this life. Folks with disabilities are no exception. But just meeting the basic needs once is not enough. There's monitoring, there's upkeep, there's inflation. There's making sure there's a balance of scales. And everyone, with a disability or not, is entitled to that level of consideration. This has been Handy Link. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you, we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Cheese, please, yes, cheese, please, you're so fine.
You want to listen all the time. Snarf-tooth and Daffodil will spin their hits. It's all cheesy music, they love it to bits. Well, Snarf-tooth is the man in the band. Fine and cheesy music is his only plan. Daffodil with sugar, but she's also spice. She might be saucy, but she can be pretty nice. All the cheesy music they can scrounge. You'll hear the favorites in the Limburger Lounge. Playing all that is wacky, warped, and weird. Ghoul and cheesy music is not to be feared. Celebrity slip-ups, polka, and more. There's even the stuff on the cutting room floor. There's weird instrumentals, people singing flat. So you know why we want to play that. Tornado on the radio, it flies by quick. All this cheesy music is kind of sick.
Cheese, please, in color. Here are your hosts.